pretty much is our whole picture, and then there's a couple of details I want to finish up. The main thing I really want to start today is Sefer Shoftim, and I'll do a quick review of Yeshua to get through the Shoftim. I want to begin something new today and start. Say go forward. Like we did the kibbutz part. So I'm going to summarize what we did, then you tell me what's not summary. I bought my little markers today. See if they work. So first, I begin with the summary. First thing I want to do is the main point I'm trying to show you in each book. How instead of reading them like chronicle, oh, here's what happened, to search what's the prophetic purpose of the book. In other words, for what reason would a Navi, like Yeshua or Shmuel, why would they write a book of Nevuah? There's usually going to be a prophetic message, and then once you identify that prophetic message, you can better understand what's in the book, what's not in the book, and how the book delivers its message through its content and structure, by what's in there, what's not in there, etc. So when we look at Sefer Yeshua, you want to divide the book real easy. Aleph Behei is called Ahara Kibush. Vav Kulbet is Kibush. And Gimel through Av Aleph can be Ahava, Achas HaKabet will be Ahava. And then Chav Gimel and Chav Aleph will be new made for now. We get a goodbye speeches. Why we need two goodbye speeches? A little bit. But in general, the first section is Kibush. The last section is Nachalah. Let me show you for a second where it comes from. Why the book is written that way.
Take a look, and this will serve as an introduction to Sefer Shoftim as well. Look in, or maybe I'll ask you guys. Was there a commandment to Yeshua to conquer the land in Chumash? Where does Yeshua get a commandment? We saw last week what God told Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Dvarim about wherever you go, I'll be there to help you. Kamakom asher tidroch kafag lechem, on the condition that you follow my laws. I think we started the share from there last week, didn't we? I'll show you the same words in the beginning. But there's another source beforehand in the end of Sefer Bamidbar. No one sees this because it's matos maseh. And no one in there, no normal person ever learns Matos Masa. You know why? It's long. It's the middle of summer vacation. So no one's in school during Matos Masa. It's always during the 3 weeks. If you're learning anything, you're learning Hilchos Tisha B'Av, Hilchos of the 3 weeks. And if even if someone's Sefer Bamidbar in school, you'll never get to the end of the book. Because you always begin with the beginning of the book, so you never finish them. Especially Bamidbar, there's so much good stuff in the middle, no one ever gets to Matos Masa. Agree no one ever learned Masa in their life? I would. So look at Masa Balkori, you might know it. At the end of Parsha, at the end of the first parak of Masa, look at the end of parak Mem Gimel. The end of Mem Gimel. Gimel? I think that's Masa. Is that any parakim in Bamidba or not? No, I messed up. Then Lamed Gimel. Up by 10. In the end of parak Lamed Gimel, in Pasuk Nun. All the masot are over. We have a whole boring and a whole interesting list of all the tachanot on the way. And after they finally finish all the travels and they're in Ever Yarden, they're opposite Yericho. What's it say there? Read Rabbi Shomer. Pasuk Nun. Okay, what commandment is that? Horashtem is how do you do Horasha? By conquering. So there's a mitzvah to possess the land. One more line. Here we go again. Horashtem et ha'aretz. Understand? Listen, it's really cool. You have to conquer the land. Why? We talked about this all that in the last year. Read that again. Vorashtem et ha'aretz. Yishevtem ba. The rest of that. I'm giving you the land to conquer. When God says I'm giving you the land, that doesn't mean he's giving you the land on a silver platter. It means I'm giving you the opportunity to conquer it. And here we prove it, the whole point we made in the last year. God says I'm giving you the land. When God says I'm giving you the land, doesn't mean you sit back and he gives it to you. means I'm going to give you an historical opportunity to take the land. Why have you been waiting so long? He can't kick them out until they deserve to be thrown out. Remember, Ki lo shalem evon amri adena. And that's why Chumash goes out of its way to tell you how bad the Canaanites are. And that's the only reason we're allowed to take it from them. But once God gives it to us, we have to do our side. So that's the mitzvah kibush. Pasek nun gimel, right? What's the next mitzvah? Understand the difference? The first two psukim were Bohorashtem et haaretz. This pasuk is Bitnachatem, which is Nachala. How do you do the Nachala? Keep going. Mm-hmm. Why do rabbis get more? Why does the rabbi get more Nachala? What does it mean the rabbi said that Nachalato? I'm joking. For a change. The rabbi doesn't mean for a rabbi, the rabbi means? Based on the bigger, that's cool. The bigger shevet, or within, is this a cloud per shevet? Who learned Yesh Nochlin? No one learned Yesh Nochlin? You've heard of Yesh Nochlin? The seventh parak. In Baba Batra, right? Yeah, Yesh Nochlin. You ever heard of that? It's there, it's in Shasta. It's a parak about Nachalot. Obviously it's going to quote from here. The Nachatavetar, that's the mitzvah of Nachala. But based on either the bigger the shevet, the bigger the nachala, the bigger land, or within every shevet, the bigger the family, the bigger the portion. We paskin, it's not the geographical areas each shevet gets has nothing to do with their size. It has to do with, you know, Jewish history. It has to do with the brachot of Yaakov and the Moshe. But within every shevet, how do you parcelize the land? The bigger the family, the more land each family gets. With proportion to the size of the families. So the Rabta ben Achatov, finish it. Ulamat. Nechalo. So that's the mitzvah of kibosh followed by nechala. Now tell me what book's going to follow now. Listen to the next line. What's that mean? If you don't get rid of them, they're going to be thorns in your side. Oh, this Mamish comes through. Keep going. If you don't do it to them, they'll do it to you. Is there a book about that? That's the introduction to Sefer Shoftim, isn't it? We're going to see it word for word in the beginning of Shoftim. But if you want this framework of what Sefer Yeshua and Sefer Shoftim are, it's right in the end of Chumash and Parshat Masrei. And then Sefer Bamidbar, because when Sefer Bamidbar began, what was supposed to happen in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar? We were supposed to camp the army, we were supposed to go in and conquer the land. Why don't we? Chetam Raglim. Then we wait 40 years. The 40 years are over, what do we need to do now? Go in. And therefore the commandment in the end of Bamidbar is to go and how to take the land. Moshe can't do it because he's going to die. What book is the story of why Moshe can't go in? Also in Bamidbar. You see what the book Bamidbar is about now? At the end of Bamidbar, we count the people again in Parshat Pinchas, we do another Mifkat of the army, and the Nachalot of who's going to get what, and then we capture every Yarden, we capture the other side of the Jordan, and we get ready to take Eretz Canaan. In fact, look at the next Parshia. What's Perek Lamed Aleph about in Bamidbar? Right. And we're going to get the borders of Eretz Canaan. And look at the next Parshia. When the borders are over. This is really cute. Keep going. Does that ring a bell? What's that sound like? When it's Sviachad, the Sviachad? Do I appreciate it? God tells Moshe to tell Yeshua, you have a mitzvah to conquer the land, to settle the land, followed by these are the borders of the land, followed by these are the people going to give up and parcelize the land. Those are the Nisim. But it sounds just like Parshat Meraglim, doesn't it? What was the real reason why God sent Meraglim? Why are they sending Meraglim to check out the land? We need people in charge of giving. If we're going to go and conquer the land, we need people. We need CEOs. You know what those are. We need administrators in charge of parcelizing the land. Where are the borders? Who's going to get what? Who's going to divide? You need a council of people who are in charge. You need what's called Rosh Eidah in camp, if you ever did camp. You need counselors, you need administrators to set up the land. So you see, the end of Sefer Bamidbar is getting us ready for conquering the land. And after this is over, we have the cities of the Levites, of the Levim, the Arei Miklat, followed by Bnei Tzofchad and their problem with their Nachala. That's the end of the book. So based on that, it makes sense that Sefer Yeshua is spinning the mold of the commandment of Kibush and Nachala and then Sefer Bamidbar. What things do we do to prepare for, what different events prepare us for taking the land? We sense Yeshua gets the people of Nebrachinu Lechon Seda, we get the 2.5 tribes ready. That was Perak Aleph, because they're going to be the front line. Then Yeshua sends spies, this time try to get it right, to check out that we decide that it's going to be how to take the land, not if we take the land. God does a miracle, they take an initiative, God does a miracle with the miracle of the Yarden, that also gets the people ready, and scares the other enemies from coming in. And then Yeshua begins to check out Yericho. In the meantime, Am Yisrael does Brit Milah and Korban Pesach. Brit Milah and Korban Pesach, sort of a spiritual preparation for the land, but also we have all these parallels to coming out of Egypt, Korban Pesach, the 10th of Nisan again, when we cross the Jordan River, Pesach time, setting up the stones and should your kids ask questions, what to tell them, Kriyat Yamsuf. We have all these events that remind us of coming out of Egypt to tell the people, the generation that went out of Egypt failed, your generation is going to do it right, hopefully. So that's Hakanah Kibush. I'll look there. Go ahead. Finally, God tells Yeshua. Yeshua is checking out the city, and God sends a malach and tells him, here's how to fight Yericho. Yeshua again takes the initiative to take the city. God does a miracle and helps him win the first battle. Do we talk about Yeshua the quarterback or not? So I'll give it an analogy. Yeshua is given the command to conquer the land. How is Yeshua supposed to conquer the land? I'll give you two scenarios, and I'll use a quarter. Everyone here knows football? You better. Maybe in the old days. You're not from America?
England.
Where? England. Soccer? No. Maybe it works that way. But in American football, you have this guy quarterback, and he sort of calls the plays. So there's two types of quarterbacks. There's a quarterback who calls all the plays. You know, you play the game, you train beforehand. And let's say it's, you know, fourth down, 2 yards to go, tie game, timeout. Who do you talk to? It's rough decisions, you call the head coach. But first quarter, second and four, you don't say timeout, do I run or pass? Who makes that call? The quarterback. I got the game right still? You know the game, don't you? I hope so. Now, Yeshua is given the job to conquer the land. Is Yeshua supposed to sit back and God's going to tell him play by play what to do? He's going to sit in the middle day and God will tell Yeshua, hey Yeshua, today we take I and take 50 men here, 20 men there, blah, blah, blah. Or is Yeshua supposed to plan things on his own? And should a big question come up, no major question, dilemma come up, then you go to God. You follow the two scenarios? Well, basically, does Yeshua have a little beeper? Nowadays, I guess the quarterbacks get a little... I haven't watched in a couple of years. I'm talking about before all this high-tech equipment was out there. Who's calling the plays, Yeshua or God? You follow the model? So we're going to see that, in general, Yeshua calls the plays. It's his job to conquer. His guide will be Sefer Devarim. When to go to war, making peace first, who goes to war, things like that. The guide about how to go to war, most of those laws are in Sefer Devarim. And every once in a while, God's going to intervene. God intervening is going to be not the norm, but something special. When you read Sefer Yeshua, you have the impression that God's always intervening. And that's, if you read the book like Chronicle, then it looks like God does all the fighting. When you understand the view, the purpose of the book is telling how God helped. Then the reason why God's always intervening, because that's the topic of the book. How God intervened in the battles. All the regular battles that he fought, Bederach HaTeva, that we don't hear about because we don't need a book for that. We don't need a book of prophecy for that. So what battles do we have in Kibush? In Kibush we have as follows. We had Yericho. What type of miracle was that? That was a big miracle. And from a military point of view, what did the miracle help them with? The walled city, how to break through the walled city. That was, we talked about the two problems, walled cities and everyone joining against them. What stopped all the nations from joining against them? That was the miracle with the Jordan River. Then we had, that was the battle of Yericho. Then we had the battle of the Ai. When we lost the first one because we didn't follow Hashem, again that was the theme. Because God promised I'll help you on the condition you follow my mitzvot. You don't follow my commandments, they lose. They learn the lesson the hard way. When they go back, God gives them a new battle plan. use the whole army properly, and then they get the battle die, they get that right. Then we talk about the story of the Givonim or not? A little bit. And even though it looked like a mistake, thanks to that battle, thanks to that mistake, the five kings go to war against Givon. And then we have the war of Hameshet Amalekim. Hameshet Amalekim Darom. Five kings of the south. And thanks to the story of the Givonim, we get these five kings outside the walled cities. Yeshua pulls the fast one, attacks them by surprise, they run away. That was Shemesh B'Givon Dom. That's what we explained the whole thing. I could not explain that here. It happened right here. In Emek Ayalon. And then all the other neighboring kings came to help the other ones, and that's how they take the south. Then all the kings up north get together, and Yeshua does a preemptive strike to defeat them. And that's called Malchei Tzafon. Those are the different battles. When it's over, we get a song of the 31 kings. That's chapter 12. Why is the kibbush, in one sense the kibbush is over, even though it's not complete. Why is it over? Up until the war against the kings of the north, even though the camp is in Gilgal, there's an existential threat to the nation camp in Gilgal. You understand why there's an existential threat? You know what that means, an existential threat? That's a big fancy word that begins with exist. Existential has the word exist in there. Your very existence is at risk. Because what might happen? All the kings of Canaan might gather up and fight you. They could have. What stopped them in the beginning? The miracle with the Jordan. Then we lost some battles and it's a problem again. Then the War of the Five Kings sort of neutralizes the kings of the south. But the kings of the north are still dangerous. So finally, after the battle of the kings of the north, there's no longer a threat that the nations of Canaan are going to join up together and kill us. But what haven't we done yet? We stepped to go and conquer and settle the land. Have you guys been in the Jordan River Valley yet?
No.
Haven't been there any? Who's been in the Jordan River Valley? Called Bikat Yarden? Never been there? You've never been there in the Bika? Okay. If you know the view there, imagine being down there in the Bika and some leader saying, see that mountain range? Go up there and go settle the land. I'll tell you what it's like. Anyone ever been in camp in the summer? Pretend you were living in camp for 40 years. All your friends, all your buddies, everyone living the same way for 40 years. And then they say, guess what? We have to leave camp. And everyone's going to go find their own place to live. You're not going to see your friends again. Who knows where everyone's going to be? For 40 years they've been living in the desert in camp style. So they cross the Jordan River. Now they don't have manna down there. They're eating from the produce of the land. But in the Gilgal, the overall machaneh is still there. The biggest problem is, and this we didn't talk about yet, in the Gilgal is the Mishkan. What's going to cause people to want to stay in the Gilgal? For you guys, the Mishkan is there. They've been living with the Mishkan at the center the whole time. It's like leaving yeshiva. How are you going to leave? You're so used to being close to God. What we're going to see, Yeshua has a solution to get the people out of the Gilgal to move up and try and conquer the land. If the land's conquered from a military point of view, the only thing that's left to do is every Shevet's got to go and make settlements and clean out any other pockets of resistance that might be around. For that, you don't need all 12 tribes fighting together. When you have an existential threat and all the nations of Canaan might be gathering against you to fight you, then I need all 12 tribes fighting together to stop them. When that threat is already gone, and I just need every Shevet to take their Nachalah, I don't need all 12 tribes and all the armies together to fight now. Every Shevet's got to do their own thing. So we're going to see, starting in chapter 13, some tribes, some Shvatim do a good job, and some Shvatim do not such a good job. So which Shvatim, look at Perek Gimel, and you'll see what the topic is there. There's two flies around here, aren't there?
Yes, one.
Just one. One's worse than 50. In Perek Gimel, it's a story of the 2.5 tribes. Did they do a good job or a bad job of Nachala? They did a great job. We hear about them in Chumash already. Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Menashe? That's Perek Gimel. Perek Dalet is about Yehuda. Yehuda Dalet and Tetvav. Did Yehuda do a good job or a bad job? Yehuda is the best of the bunch. That's a story about Kalev. He He takes big leadership. They take Hebron. They take the whole mountain range. And Yudag, it's two chapters about how much, about all the kibbutz they did. All Perek Yud-Gimel and all Perek Yud-Dalet. All Perek Yud-Dalet and all Perek Yud-Vav. In Perek Tetzayin, we have the story of Bnei Yosef, who also did a pretty good job compared to everybody else. That's Ephraim and Menashe. And we get what they did, and we also get their cities and borders. That leaves us with how many Shvatim? 2.5 tribes on the other side, Yudah and Ephraim and Menashe on this side. How many tribes is that all together? 2.5. Reuven got a Chatzim Menashe, then Yudah, Ephraim, and Chatzim Menashe. That's 5. How many are left? 7 are left. Look in Perek Yud-Chet. Everyone have Perek Yud-Chet? This we didn't do yet, did we? Look in Perek Yud-Chet, the first 3 lines. Yeshua's got a plan. Five tribes take initiative. They do a pretty good job getting their nachala. The rest of the tribes, they do such a good job. I don't think many probably they are. You know pretty much on the map where all the Shvatim are? Without memorizing them, you know how it works? It's real easy. I draw the big cities. Just tell me if you know these cities.
This is the Dead Sea, Kinneret, Mediterranean.
Okay?
That much, you know. What city, guess, is the star going to be?
Yerushalayim.
That'll be Yerushalayim. This is going to be Hebron, Be'er Sheva, Adan. Shechem. Let's put here Shibo. Shechem. You know what a fool is? No, any Israel? This is Mount Carmel. This is the Galil. This is the Shomron. This is Hare Yehuda. Is that okay? Hare Yehuda, okay. This is the coastal plain. You're familiar with that? This is Ammon. Moab. This is Gilad. Nachal Yabok from last week's parsha or this week's parsha? Last week. This week.
This week.
Nachal Yabok. That's Nachal Arnon. It's over here. That's the Baizamat. This is the Yarmouk. This is the Bashan. Syria.
Just all ring a bell, I hope? Maybe? No? Don't know your country? Fine. So now, on top of that map, rings the bell a little bit. So where's Yehuda? Where did Yehuda get their Nachala? What area is Yehuda?
Their capital city is Hebron. So this area here is Yehuda. Yehuda is like a god like this. That's Yehuda. Who's next to it? It should be, but who took their Nachala next? Ephraim? Ephraim is here. Ephraim is from Shechem. I should put a city with Beit El. Where is Beit El?
Over there.
There we go. Ephraim. And over here is going to be Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe is basically the Shomron. Yehuda is the Yehuda. What's in between Ephraim and Yehuda? That's going to be Yenimi. Between Beit El and Yerushalayim, or Beit Ketav Shechem, Nachlat Shechina, that's Binyamin. Yericho is over here.
Yerushalayim is within Binyamin, or Yehuda and Binyamin
share
Yerushalayim?
Yes.
Yerushalayim is where? Yerushalayim is Binyamin, Yerushalayim is Yehuda. What's the answer?
Both.
On the border.
Yeah, and also the Beit HaMikdash.
It's right. Not on the border, yeah. It's that you've been to Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, you've been to you've seen Geben Hinnom, Brichat HaSultan.
Nope.
You walk, you don't realize that's what it's called. You've been to the King David's Citadel Hotel, King David Hotel. So when you walk from the King David Hotel to the hotel, do you have to go downhill? To the King David.
Yeah.
And the King David, you go downhill and then uphill?
Yeah.
Yeshua Yafo? Mm-hmm. So there's a valley there. And it gets steeper and steeper and steeper. That's Gebet Hinnom. It makes the east, the western border, then it curves around and goes down to Ir David. Goes around Har Zion. Then Nachal Kidron is on the other side. Wait, the border between Yehuda and Binyamin is the mountain range. Well, actually, we'll read it in a minute. It's the mountain range that goes from Binyanei Huma, Tachem Merkazit, down Rehov Yafo, down King George, down Rehov Yafo to Rehov King David, to the King David, and ends up by the Inbal. Inbal. And then cuts down Gebe Ninom by the Cinematheque over there, Har Zion. That's basically the line between Yehuda and Binyamin. We'll read it in a minute. Do you know there's a restaurant? Well, I'll show you. We're right there. We're in Parak Yud-Bet. I'll show you where it talks about the restaurant. This is what they...
That's a friend of Hashem. Ruvain is over here. Ruvain is here. God is here. Hatzim and Hashem. And then, this is Yisra'el. Big Israel's Kulun. Naphtali is Tzad. And Asher is the other part together.
Understand? I missed one shape.
Dan. Where's Dan belong? Dan's supposed to be up north, isn't it?
That's what God told Moshe Rabbeinu, didn't he? God shows Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Chumash.
He's here on Minor Low, and God shows him, Mina Gilad Adam. Dan belongs right over here, tell Dan. Chassid Asher is Asher. Dan belongs here, but Dan got the Nachala over here. Sorry. Dan got the Nachala over here.
Like what's called Gushkan today. Know what happened? There's two reasons. One is there was too far, they couldn't do it, they couldn't handle the stuff up there. So Yehuda, and also Shimon got sort of swallowed up with Yehuda.
Shimon's over here with the Yehuda.
Yehuda did such a good job that he had helped two other Shvatim out. So he gave his frontier area to Dan, and they dealt with the Plishtim, good old Shimshon. And Shimon sort of got swallowed up with Yehuda. And that's where they went. Why did we do all this? So take a look down Perek Yud-Chet. That's where the Shvatim was supposed to go. What Shvatim did a good job?
Ruben got a Chatzim and Asher did a good job. You got a Chatzim and Asher did also did a good job. And we have seven Shvatim. That's Dan, Binyamin, Yisachar, Zvulun, Ashkandi and Asher. We did a pretty lousy job.
Watch what Yeshua does. Perek Yud-Chet.
Have it? Take a look in Perek Yud-Chet. Yalla.
Yeshua's got a great idea. Shiloh is over here.
Shiloh's back in the middle of the mountain range. Gilgal is down here. How you recall? The Mahmed's been in Gilgal for 14 years already.
As long as the Mishkan is in Gilgal,
no one's going to leave the Lower East Side. You don't know what the Lower East Side is, do you? Lower side. It's like Boulder Screen. And then some. Who can explain what I mean by no one leaves the Lower East Side? When the Jews came to America from Europe, how come everyone went to the Lower East Side? Well, just near Ellis, that's where they came. And that's where all the rabbis were, all the yeshivas were, all the friends were, all the kosher butchers, all the kosher restaurants. Why did nobody leave? Because no one wants to leave. Conditions aren't great, but no one wants to leave. No one's leaving the Gilgal. They've been living that way for 40 years. Especially with the Mishkan in the middle. What's Yeshua do? He takes the Mishkan and moves it where? Right to the spot where he needs the most settlement. Right to the mountain range.
Smack in the middle of the mountain range, in the middle of the shrine. It happens to be Yeshua. But that's an area with the force that needs to be cut down. And he moves the Mishkan to the Gilgal of Shiloh, hoping that the people will now move from Shiloh and settle the land.
He's trying to take apart Shiloh. Now listen to what he tells the people. The whole nation gathers in Shiloh, and listen to what he tells them. Be on. Just like we said. Because up until now, in Perek Gimel Yedalet, we had five tribes. Reuven, Gad, Chatzim and Asher, Chatzim and Asher, Ephraim, and Yehuda. Listen to what he tells them. What's it mean, Adana Atamitrapim? What's mitrapim? Remember Nirpim, Atem Nirpim? Who said to who? Paul said to the Jews, you guys are lazy, that's why you're talking about all these religious ideas. He said, Matetem mitrapim, how come you guys are so weak and passive to go and conquer your land? What do we see from there? There was an opportunity to take the land, and the people didn't take the opportunity. Who yells at them? Yeshua. Because when God promises the land, He promised He'll help us if we help ourselves. God's saying, God will be there for you, but you got to do something. And therefore, one more line, what's Yeshua do? Got it? They survey the land, they give every Shevet gets their Nachala, they make it official, there's the Goral. In Shechem, in the Goral, everyone gets what, we find out for sure every Shevet what they get, what the borders will be, and then they go to take their Nachala. Look at the next Parshia. Who's the first one to get theirs? Yeah, so look at the first line about Binyamin, it's interesting. That's cool. But what did Binyamin do in Chumash, in Bereshit? What's Binyamin able to do? In that whole story with Yosef and his brothers. Who does he bring together? Remember Parshat Vayigash? Yehuda and Yosef finally meet. And Binyamin brings them together. So we have the same idea. Between their quotes, between Binyamin, between Yehuda and Ephraim, Binyamin, that's going to be the Halashkena. And then we get the borders. Now, look where the border begins. Just read the border real fast. Basically, just went from Ramallah, from Beit El Ramallah area, and then one more line. Now we get back to here. You've heard of Kiryat Yarim? You pass that on the way here, don't you? Kiryat Yarim is Telstone. Telstone, you've heard of? Not too far from Mevaseret. So the border of Binyamin ends up by Telstone. Now listen carefully what happens from Telstone. What Pastor get Phil? Listen now in Tetzav. Now we're going to get the rest of it. Okay. The border went from Telstone. Now we get the southern border, and it ends up in Meneftoach, which is Riftah today, which is the main bus station. Outside Yerushalayim. There's a place not too far called Riftah outside in Romema. Right there.
There's like a well there?
Yeah.
You go to the
cage? Yeah. If you don't find a bunch of druggies out there. It's a big hangout there. Now, we're Techon and Merkazi. Listen to the border carefully. Now, Pasuk Yedzayin? Tezayin. Sorry. V'yarad ha'gvul at Kseahar. With Kseahar? Listen carefully. The mountain overlooking Geben Hinnom. Which is north of Emek Rafaim. Emek Rafaim? Isn't that a restaurant joint? Why are we naming a place about restaurants? You've heard Emek Rafaim, everybody knows. Correct? Why is Emek Rafaim called Emek Rafaim? What? Because there's an Emek. There's a valley there. In fact, you might notice there were some railroad tracks that no one uses anymore there. You have to cross sometimes to get to your car or something, or get to your friends in Baca. You got good friends in good apartments there somewhere. That's where things are happening. So the railroad tracks are there for a good reason. The only valley in Yerushalayim that goes all the way to the coast without having to go uphill. In other words, if I take a cup of water at the Inba Hotel and pour it out, that water is going to go down Emek Rafaim, going to go all the way to Malcha, the mall. It's going to go through the Katamonim, through Malcha, all downhill, down. It starts from Emek Rafaim, keeps going all the way down. It goes all the way to Malcha. From Malcha, it's going to go past the zoo and going to go all the way to Beit Shemesh, and then all the way to Tel Aviv. That's why the Turks built the railroad there. Because a railroad can't go whoop like that. It's not a roller coaster. The railroad's got to go on the gradient. And that's why the railroad goes like crazy. Now, you know how they solved the problem today? They're building a new railroad. They just cut the mountain out and make these big giant bridges. You might have noticed the big one.
It's going straight into a mountain.
And they go straight into a mountain. So back then you couldn't do that. So the Turks went around, but that's why the train station, the old train station, is at the end of Emek Rafaim, right by the Imbal, by the park over there, by the Liberty Bell Park. Now, where does the border go? The border goes from Tachon Merkazi, on top of the mountain, which is Rehov Yafo, all the way down to the mountain overlooking Gibeon Ben Hinnom, north of Emek Rafaim, which is the King David Hotel. There's a mountain, the King David Hotel is sitting on a mountain overlooking the old city. So that's the border of Binyamin between one more line and we're done. Where does it go from overlooking there? Ketev Yivusi is the sharp hill of Har Tzion where Shiva Lakota is on. Like, but you know the parking lot of the Jewish quarter, there's a big hill going down to Har Zion there. That's Ketesh Yevusi. That's the shoulder. Yevusi. Then he goes to Ein Rogel, which is Er David. And from there he goes to Mele Edomim on the way to back to Yericho. Understand the border? That's the border of Binyamin. It's all in our backyard. So now, in case someone asks, it was Emek Rephaim mentioned in Tanakh. Now you know what it is. I spent too much time on that, but that was just fun. So that's Binyamin. Then look at the next chapter. In Perek Yutet, we have six Shvatim. And we don't hear much about them, do we? Other than these are the six, that's what they're supposed to get. But they don't do too much of a job. Perek Chaf, what's the topic? Ari Mikvat, and the next Perek is going to be Ari Levim. You know, I said now they're connected because, in essence, all the Ari Levim turn into Ari Mikvat. And that's also fulfilling up in Chumash. In Perek Chabet, there's an interesting story with the two and a half tribes when everyone did whatever they could do, the two and a half tribes go back, they did the job, and they have a great idea. Remember what they want to do? Okay. They want to build a Mizbeach. What are they worried about, the two and a half tribes? Right now everything is fine, but they're worried about in a couple generations down the line, the people on our side of Erskine, on our side of the Jordan River, are going to say, you know what? You guys, you're not really part of Am Yisrael. You know why? Because what's the border of Israel? Jordan River. Moses couldn't go in, remember? And who else is there? Not only Rebekah, Fatim and Asher, also Ammon, and Moab, and Ishmael, and Edom, there's Edom. Esau, and Ishmael is down there in the desert. If you're following Sefer Bereshit, anyone who's kicked out of the family, where do they go? Eber Yarden. So, Lot was kicked out. That's Ammon and Moab. Ishmael was kicked out. He's down there. Esau was kicked out. He's in Edom. Maybe Reuven was kicked out. Any good reason for Reuven to be kicked out? We got a story about that, don't we? A couple of stories about Reuven. Maybe God might have done something wrong also. So they're afraid that people are going to think in the future that all the tribes on this side of the Jordan River are not part of us. They want to solve the problem. What do they decide? We're going to build a big Mizbeach to show. Not a Mizbeach to bring Karbonot, but a Mizbeach that will be a symbol that we're co-religionists. When they build that, everyone's up in arms. Oh my gosh, this is Avodah Zarah, this is something terrible. And they almost go to war. For one of the few times in Jewish history, instead of going to war, they actually talk to each other. Pinchas comes and solves the problem, and they realize it was miscommunication, and it has a happy ending. Then in Perek Gimel, Yeshua gives his goodbye speech. I think we even talked about that one, where he tells them, "Look what God did for you so far, and wherever you went, God was there to help you, and now you guys finish the job up." Now read Pasuk Yedal in Perek Gimel. I want to prove to you the book in the last 15. Remember I told you the purpose of the book was to prove that God kept his side of the promise, and if there's a failure, you're to blame? Look at what Yeshua tells him in Pasuk Yedal. Have it, Perek Gimel? Pasuk Yedal. It's his goodbye speech. Look in the first line to make sure you realize it's his goodbye speech. The first line of Perek Gimel, what proves it's his goodbye speech? And how much land is left? And he's telling them that God, look what God did for you so far, but there's a lot more to do. Just like he helped you so far, he'll continue to help you. He gives hope, you can read it later on. Read Pasuk, start from Yud Gimel now. I'm sorry, Yud Bet. If you intermingle with the other nations and you follow their idol worship, what will happen to you? Next line. What's the one? If you don't finish the kibush and you intermingle and let them take advantage, and you follow their culture, you're not going to last it very long. Just like the original condition, God will help you if you follow his laws. And if you don't take them, they're going to come and give you trouble. Now listen to the next line. Pasuk Yudalet. That's the proof he's leaving. Is that my whole point? I think that's a good proof. Yeshua's final speech is, what do you need to know? You should know, meaning, nothing was missing. There was everything God promised, kept. Everything that I promised you came true. And he just said in the same speech that the kibbush isn't complete. There's a lot more to do. What does it mean everything came true? What came true? Wherever you went, I was there to help you. And that's what happened. What wasn't taken? Wherever you didn't go, that wasn't taken. And therefore, it's what my speech is, finish the job. And if not, you'll be in big trouble. One more line and we're done. Okay, that's it. That's his goodbye speech. Look in Perek Chavdalet. One more goodbye speech. Twice the goodbye, yeah. One more goodbye speech. Yeah, read the first line. Okay. There's another gathering. We can see this happened earlier. Read the next line and tell me if it rings the bell. Don't tell me where it's from, but just tell me if it rings the bell. Perek Chavdalet Pasuk Bet. Does it ring? First, does it ring a bell? I don't care from where. Does it ring a bell to anybody? Who does it ring a bell to? Nobody. Yeah. Okay. Anyone know where it's from? Where? What's Haggadah? Read the next line. Is this the Pesach Haggadah? Also in Haggadah? Keep going. That's how we read Haggadah. You're right. Those three lines we read in Haggadah, you know where? This is right after. We make an amazing statement in Haggadah. We say something like this. We say, Mitchila uvdei avodah zarah yavotenu. Ring a bell. Vachshav. Kivana makom lavadato. You guys still awake at that part? Remember Mitchila? Remember we start Avadim Ha'inu, Mitchila, Rabban Shmuel. You know the Machloket, Rabban Shmuel. That's a gross Masechet. It's the 10th Perek. You know the 10th Perek of Pesachim, right? Mentioned that when you were little kids? You can say you're learning Gemara and you're just reading like a Muslim mission. It's like learning Shulchan Aruch and saying you're learning Gemara. 10th Perek. You know what I'm talking about, the 10th Perek of Pesachim? Because the Machloket, that Rabban Shmuel, where do we start the story from? From Avadim Ha'inu or Mitchila? So in Haggadah we do both. We make a statement. In the beginning, our forefathers were coming from the world of idol worship, and God brought us closer to serve Him. And then we prove it. Shneamar. How do we prove that our forefathers were once idol worshippers? How do we know that? We quote from Yeshua. Because what did Yeshua say? Terach Avi Avraham v'Avdu Azim Acherim. And God took Avraham. Got it? So Yeshua gives a whole history speech. And what I want you to do, this is a lot of fun. You'll see why we quote this in Haggadah. Because we say, V'achshav kirbana makom lavadato. God brought us closer to serve Him. Yeshua begins a history speech here. I want you to find for me where the history speech ends. He starts in Pasuk Bet. First, find for me where the history speech ends. He's going to give him a whole lesson in Jewish history. Find me where. What's the last Pasuk of the history? Okay, where's the history at? Yes, I think he had it right. Including Gid Gimel, not including? Including Gid Dalet, not including Gid Dalet? Not including Gid Dalet. From Bet Yud Gimel is history. Gid Dalet's going to start something new. Look at that history. It's classic Jewish history. Tell me if there's some major event that's missing. Put it this way, before you look, what event should be here? He starts with Terach and Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We have to have Shibud Mitzrayim, we should need. What else should we have? Coming out of Egypt. Kriyat Yamsu, what else should we have? Har Sinai and? Mishkan maybe, and? Maybe the ego. Put the bad news in. Okay, now take a look, and then Kinsel Aretz. Take a look what you have, what's missing. What's missing? Har Sinai is missing, isn't it? Something fishy going on. How could Yeshua, how could he miss? How could he not mention Har Sinai? He mentions everything else, doesn't he? It's all there. He doesn't mention Har Sinai. Keep that in mind. Now, what's Yeshua tell him? Pasuk Yudalet. He's going to make an offer they can refuse. They can refuse or can't refuse. What is in English? An offer you?
Can't refuse.
Can't refuse. So listen to this offer. Yeah, listen to this offer. Pasuk Yudalet. Listen carefully. After I told you this history.
ואם רב אינכם לעבוד את השם, בחרו לכם היום, את מי תעבודו, אם את אלוהים אשר עבדו עבודכם, אשר מעבר הנהר, ואם את אלוהי האמורי אשר אתם ישו בארצם, אנוכי וביתי נעבוד את השם.
Yeshua is making a suggestion to them. What choice is he giving them? Either serve God, or serve which gods? Either serve the God who took you out of Egypt, or serve what other God? The God of Terach and all his chevra? Or the God of the Canaanites. What's problematic about that? What choice is Yeshua giving the people? Do you realize what Yeshua is doing? What choice did he just give them? To what? They can serve other gods. How could he do such a thing? Isn't that what he's saying? So what do the people answer? So now, that's good, isn't it? What should Yeshua say? Shkoyach, right? Keep going. That's the people. Say, we're in on this. We want to follow God. This is what Yeshua says back to them. What's Yeshua telling the people? The people say, okay, Yeshua, we're going to follow the God, our God took us out of Egypt. We're not going to follow the gods of Canaan. What's Yeshua tell them? You can't do it. It's too hard for you. Is this nuts? First he gives them a choice to worship other gods. He says, no, we'll worship our God. And then he says, you know what? It's too hard for you. You won't be able to keep up to it. It's like the story is ridiculous. One more line. If you take upon yourself to serve God, what's going to happen? You're going to mess up, and boy, he's going to get angry and punish you. One more line. Okay, but the people, no, we're going to serve God. Then finally? Now, finally, what's he do next? They make a brief. Haven't we been there and done that? What brief are they making in Shechem? Their heart agrees to serve God. Didn't they have one of those already? And before then? This is our grief. This is a flashback. This happened back in Perek Zayin, back in Perechet. But in Chumash, didn't we do this? What do we call this topic in Chumash? And what brief is it called? Where do they state that brief? Remember Nasa Ben Ishma? Didn't Am Yisrael Har Sinai? Remember God says it. Batem Tudim Amlechet Kuni B'Koy Kadosh. Shemot Yishmo B'Kadosh Shmatem Et Briti. And we said Nasa Ben Ishma, and we made a brief. And we sprinkled the blood. Been there, done that. We did that already, didn't we? Why is it being repeated? Now, what problem is that? First of all, what problem did it just solve? What did Yeshua leave out of the speech? Matan Torah, or Brit Sinai. Because what do you want to do now? And we know Har Gruzim and Harival, or the whole thing in Harival, we're going to read the Torah again. It's going to be a redoing Mamad Har Sinai. Why is there a need to reconvene Mamad Har Sinai? Why do we have to make a new treaty? What was wrong with the first one? What? It broke. But there's something fundamentally problematic with the first covenant. But after they made the covenant after in the beginning, but then you read Parshat Mishpatim and they said again, and in the desert in the 40th year they They agree to it again in Arbat Moab. Yeah? You're a good Zionist, right? So in a desert doesn't count, Eretz Yisrael has more Kedusha. It could be, for sure. That for sure. It's even a better answer than I'm going to get. But that's more too Zionistic for here. For people going back to America next year. Yeah?
They weren't really given a choice.
What do you mean they weren't given a choice?
In
Shemot they weren't given a choice. Moshe tells the people, Shemot Yishmot B'Kol Yishmot Emet B'riti, and Moshe brings it down, and what do the people answer? If they didn't have a choice, they couldn't say no sin. Yeah?
Moshe had only done like good, amazing things to them, so like it made logical sense to go along with it.
Okay.
So, but now, like, after that, I don't know.
Now doesn't God just haven't captured the land?
Okay, but they have to do like active like work.
You're all close, but there's one other relevant key point. So then every generation should have to go through this. And you're right, that's why we have hell every year. But there's one fundamental problem with Brit Sinai. You know it by heart, but you don't realize what I'm talking about. I'll just give you one hint. What's the problem with Brit Sinai? Modern day.
Oh.
Chazal say it a different way. Chazal don't use a gun. What does Chazal use? Who remembers Kafalim Harkikigi? What's that mean, Kafalim Harkikigi? Is that a matter she takes literally or seriously?
Some say seriously.
But everyone says seriously. Literally, you can argue. Whether God really took a mountain over them and threatened that way, that you can say that might be metaphoric. But what's the serious meaning of that? When I say take seriously, it means don't take it literally. I say I have to learn how to appreciate Chazal. Chazal was so good, and sometimes you ruin it when they take him literally. What's that Medrash coming to tell you? Why did they have no choice in Har Sinai? But even, so you're right, that's like you were saying. What do you need to live? For in order to survive, what do people need? You need food. Where's the food coming from in the desert? The water, the man. That's right before Mamad Har Sinai. We have the water miracle and we have the food miracle with the man. God just took him out of Egypt. It's like what you said, I was trying to make it a little bit stronger. God took him out of Egypt. Mitzrayim could come and chase them again. Who knows what? Without God in the desert, they're dead. Because without food, they said we're going to die here, didn't they? What? In a miraculous way, they're getting food every day. They're getting water every day. What are the people afraid of? What would happen if they would say no? They're going to die. So why did they say yes? Because they have no choice. You're right, they had no choice. That's what you said. You're right, but they had a choice, but they didn't have a choice. You understand what I mean? And technically speaking, they had a choice. But practically speaking, they didn't have a choice. That's what Chesed Chazal say, Kafalim Harki Gigit. You know the sugya from Purim, remember? Kimu B'Kimu? Remember? Modad Yoraita, that what he called. It's when we said that to Benishma, we were under duress. Any Jewish, even a non-Jewish boy can get you out of a treaty like that. When God has a mountain over your head. You're signing a contract under duress. So you can say, if I wasn't under duress, maybe I wouldn't have said it. What's Yeshua doing now? Okay. What changed now? So you're right, now they're in Eretz Yisrael. That's even better than I'm saying. That's mamash good. They're in Eretz Yisrael. That's good. It's Zionistic. But on top of that, what else is there? Now they have their own supply of water. Now they have their own food. Now, who don't they need now? Now they don't need God. And if they accept being Abdei Hashem now, Hashem Nahod, not under duress, then that's going to be binding. This is the first Kimu V'Kibru. Understand what Yeshua is up to? Now you see why it's important. Most likely this happened a little bit earlier, but it's a beautiful ending. Again, if it's chronicle, it doesn't make sense. If it's prophetic, then this is the perfect ending. Because what's the ending about? A renewed Mamad Har Sinai. And what did they say? What's the brit about? Look at the brit again. What's the main point of the brit? What's the main point of the brit? What are they saying? Take a look. What's the main point that people are saying? What's the issue offering? Et Hashem Elokeinu Na'avod. If you were in high school, I'd have you take this little highlighter and highlight the word Lavodat Hashem. Just take a quick scan. You see it over every other line? In the conversation from Pasuk Yedalet? Et Mi Tavod? Now, go back to Agada. What do we say in Agara? Mitchilo of day avodatayu, v'achshav kivana makom la'avodato. Then we say Shenemar. What do we need to prove? Not only that our forefathers were idol worshippers, we also have to prove that why did God choose us? In order to serve Him. Isn't serving God a big topic in Judaism? Like there's a thing we say Shema. What does Chazal call that? Kabbalat Omachut Shemaim? Let me clarify one thing. When we say Shema every day, sometimes it's taught as saying Shema is, I think we talked about this before Rosh Hashanah maybe. Did we? Maybe did. That saying Shema is not just a statement of monotheism. Saying Shema is a pledge of allegiance. You're making a statement not just that God exists, you're making a statement that not only does He exist, but it's my job to serve Him. That's what Am Yisrael is about. And now Yeshua, that He brings the people in, He tells the people, if Hashem Elinu Navod, we're gonna serve God. Because that's from a prophetic point of view, that's the most important topic of Tanakh. Therefore, how does Sefer Yeshua end? Not with the last event of Yeshua's life. Sefer Yeshua ends when Yeshua, as a leader, and the new leader of Am Yisrael, remember the book begins, Moshe's Eved Hashem, the book ends with Yeshua's Eved Hashem, and now Yeshua, who's Eved Hashem, taking over from Moshe Eved Hashem, wants to make sure the people are going to be Abdei Hashem. And Am Yisrael takes, and that's this last gathering, which is a beautiful ending for the book. And that's why we quote it in Haggadah. If you want something cute to do for the Haggadah, you can always read this. This parak comes in really nice. And that's why we quote it. When Haggadah quotes it, it just doesn't quote the first three lines. It's the first three lines, and it should say, etc. It should say three dots, not a period. Because the proof, V'achshav kevana makom la'avodato, is from the whole parak. Now, take a quick look, and we'll finish with that. Look at the very beginning of Perek Aleph in Shoftim. I mean, look at Perek Aleph in Shoftim. Not the beginning, the end of the Perek. Look at Perek Aleph in Shoftim. Look at, like, the last 5-6 parshiot in Perek Aleph. Look how they all begin. See how they all begin? Think I got it?
Yeah,
got it. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Sorry about that. What are we talking about? Yeah. Look. How does this parsha begin? With this own take. Okay. Look how they all begin. The Horishu, the Horishu, the Horishu. Is that neat? What Shevet did Morish? The beginning Shevet Yehuda did a great job. But look at all the Shvatim afterwards. Who did Morish? Menasheh lo horish. Afterwards, lo horish. Even the final Menasheh didn't finish the job. You that did. Everyone else didn't. Who else didn't? Zvulun lo horish. Who else? Asher and Naphtali. Everybody. And therefore the Malachans from the Bochim. And that proves our point that Yeshua didn't finish the job. And Sefer Yeshua didn't finish the job. It's clear the conquest is incomplete. It's going to take hundreds of years until it's done. Not until the time of David is finished. That was my opening part of this year. What's the book about? The book is about how who's to blame and who's not to blame. Who's not to blame for the failure? Because what did God do? Everything He said He would do. What did He say He would do? Help us if we help ourselves. And if we follow His laws. And why was it incomplete? Because we didn't do a full job. And that's Yeshua's job as a leader. To encourage them to. It's understandable they don't finish the job. It's not an easy thing to do. And that's why that's going to kick off with all the bad events in Sefer Shoftim. In Sefer Shoftim, there's going to be trouble. That'll be the next topic, what the book of Shoftim is about. But you can guess what the book won't be about. It won't be about Shoftim. It's called Shoftim, but we'll see next week when we do Sefer Shoftim, the topic will be more, it's about kings, not about... We'll see what the book's about. It's like really neat. But we have to organize the book and put that together. So we'll stop here. Yeah, we're over time. Next week we're still normal because it's not Hanukkah yet. Hanukkah, I'm assuming there won't be Shir. I'm assuming, I guess. Usually there's always things happening. I can't imagine. Usually in yeshivas it's like, that goes to the Greeks won. Now the Greeks won. What did the Greeks want to do to us? We celebrate the victory. The Greeks didn't want us to learn Torah. Right? They learned Torah, what else? They didn't Bechira Chofshid and Greek culture, the whole stuff. How do we celebrate Hanukkah? We don't learn Torah for a week. Yeah? We play dreidel, which is a game of chance. Don't Bechira Chofshid. And what else do we do? And we have Maccabee games, which is our Olympics, which is Greek culture today. So we celebrate how the Greeks won.